The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Welcome to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to Truth Transforms. Join in for spiritually enlightening discussion and the practical application of new thought principles. Here's your host, Reverend Galen McDowell.
Welcome to Truth Transforms. I am your host, Galen McDowell, and I am the Senior Assistant Minister and Executive Minister at Christ Universal Temple in Chicago, Illinois, where the Reverend Dr. Derek B. Wells is the Senior Minister, and the Reverend Dr. Johnny Coleman is the founder. I'm doing a show today titled, you know, basically how to make permanent change. But I think that I at least need to give my quick tribute to the basketball player who, along with his daughter and seven other people, made their transition on Sunday morning or afternoon in Chicago in the morning of in California, Kobe Bryant. The reason why I want to do that, besides the fact that I'm a gigantic Kobe fan and I know how much it's actually affected people, including me, because it was just so shocking, that I just want to just take a moment just to acknowledge a person who I feel had such a powerful work ethic that his work ethic overshadowed his amazing athletic ability. You know, there are people who in the athletic world who sometimes people say, well, that person just doesn't want it bad enough, or they don't have the heart, etc., or they don't work on their skills because they were gifted with such athletic talent, you know, just born with it. But he was a person who was born with all of the athletic skill that a basketball player could ever want. He had a good height. He was exceptionally explosive, quick, fast. He had jumping ability and a coordination. But his fundamentals were fantastic. He could shoot every shot. He knew every spot on the floor. He hustled. He played hard on defense. He was known as one of the best practice players ever, emulating his idol, Michael Jordan. Matter of fact, Michael Jordan said he stole every move that he had. And I think that that was a tribute to the fact that somebody worked as hard as Jordan, and maybe even harder, to emulate someone that you idolized. So I just want to just take a moment just to just acknowledge that process. Don't let your talent outpace your work ethic. Make sure that your work ethic goes beyond whatever talents and gifts you have, because that will allow you to maximize what you were born with, your God-given talent. All of us have God-given talent and abilities. However, we always have to be mindful that it's the work. You have to put the work in. It doesn't make a difference who you are, where you are, what you do. You have to put the work in. If you put in the work, you'll get the results. Now, some people will say, well, I put in the work and I didn't get all the results. However, I would say if you put in the work, you'll be well beyond where everyone else is. Because a lot of times what ends up happening is, Les Brown would say, if you shoot for the moon or the stars, even if you don't make it, you'll come down with stardust in your hand. A lot of people don't ever leave the ground, and other people, because they shoot for the highest heights, even if they don't make the highest heights, they're above 99% of the folks. And to think about it, what's impressive is, you know, out of all of the 7 billion people on the planet, especially when you start dealing with people who are in rare air, like an NBA player, how do you out of less than 1% of all human beings, or even less when you consider the NBA as all men, it might be 0.2, 0.3 of all the people or even less than that, 0.0001 of all the people who live on the planet, who've ever lived on the planet, not only do you become one of those best people in the world who've ever played the game, but you're one of the best out of them. That's the dedication and talent. That is the dedication that goes along with your talent that makes things work. So if anybody that's out there that's working through this this challenge, you know, I'm praying with you, praying for you, and knowing with you that God is eternal life, that God is the life of everyone who is on this side of the veil and on the other side of the veil. And they're in the presence of God, just as we are in the presence of God, because God is omnipresent. And life is eternal. It changes form, but it still goes on. So I bless him. I bless his daughter and the other people on the helicopter as they move on in God's eternal life into their new expression of living. And I thank Kobe for the example of hard work and knowing and going after your big dreams and goals, because that is something worthy of following. So anyway, as we go forward into the show about making lasting change, I do want to just acknowledge, first of all, that if you didn't get an opportunity, I would strongly suggest go to YouTube and take a look at my sermon, Make the Most of Every Opportunity. It's just from this past Sunday at Christ Universal Temple. You can go to the CU Temple YouTube page, or obviously Google my name and the title for it to come up. But believe me when I tell you, I think that it could be something that was that's beneficial to all of you. Now, creating lasting change, because I think that is what we're talking about today. Creating lasting change, because that's what it's really all about. When we recognize that there are times when we want to change, we want to transform something, we want to flip the script, and yet we're not getting the results we desire. And we're trying to figure out, why is it that no matter how many times I start and stop a thing, the diet or working with the money or work issues or, you know, working out or whatever the goal is, that it's a stop and start process, or more stopping than starting? Well, I think a lot of it is because to create lasting change, you have to have leverage. If you have a pen, I would even want you to write down leverage or type it in your phone. Leverage. Leverage is the key to change. You know, there are tons of books that talk about leverage. They don't always use the word leverage, but they always mean leverage. For instance, you know, Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why. Why is the leverage? You have to know why. Your why has to be big enough to move the needle. Now, I often say, you know, when a parent is exceptionally tired, hard day at work, and it's 2 a.m, and the baby starts crying because the baby needs to be fed or the diaper needs to be changed or whatever, the parent might not want to get up. The parent might not want that sleeping pattern to be interrupted. However, the parental love of a parent, most parents, the overwhelmingly more parents than not, will get up, change the diaper, feed the baby, rock the baby to sleep, whatever is necessary, because the why is so strong. That baby, the love of their child creates leverage to get them out of bed. When you want to create lasting change, you have to figure out your leverage point. I think it's really important to acknowledge that the leverage point makes all the difference in the world. how much leverage do you have on really losing weight? How much leverage do you really have on dieting? And the reason why I say leverage is because I've known people who, you know, who've been told, you know, don't smoke cigarettes or, you know, because of the health issues that they developed and they still smoke. Don't drink and they still drink. You know, if you keep gaining weight, this will be a problem. And yet they still do it because they haven't found their leverage point. They want the food. They want the cigarette. They want the liquor. They want the drugs more than the issue of what could possibly happen if they stop. So what I mean by that is simply this. Just because the situation is in front of you that is telling you, no, you need to stop. If you don't create a leverage point, if you don't find your leverage point, and you can create one or find one, it doesn't make a difference. Because even when you find one, you're really creating one. You will still do the things that will interrupt your life and upset your life, frustrate your life, downgrade your life, and I would say even take your life, not take in the sense of take, but, you know, in other words, get you in the space of making your transitions because you just didn't find your leverage point. So what I want to talk today about is just getting to the space of understanding how to shift definite and strong beliefs. How to shift definite and strong beliefs so you can find your leverage point. Now, I have a caller that called in, so I want to take this call. Could you please put the caller in, please? Hello?
Hey, good morning.
Oh, hey there, Reverend Sherry. How you doing?
I'm good. I think this is a really powerful conversation of using leverage to shift those I don't know, permanent beliefs, but and there's no belief that's permanent because belief is fluid. But I feel like one of the most powerful points of leverage is to use someone else's life as leverage. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. I had a really interesting experience this weekend. One is that my mom went into the hospital unexpectedly, and it was a scare. We didn't know what was going on. She thought that it was potentially a stroke. And I'm all the way in California. She's in Texas. And we ultimately put the prayer team on it and turned it back into nothing. But it really woke me up to, you know, my mom is in her 70s. I can't tell you exactly how many more years I have with her on this side of life. But just wanting her to see the fruit of what she put in me, all of the seeds that she sowed through, you know, education and exposure and really to see the fullness of that. And when I tell you, I came at Monday with a new fire. And mind you, not like I'm not tired from the weekend and preaching and everything else we had to get done over the weekend, but I came with a new fire, she became my leverage, or wanting her to see the fullness of what she gave me became my leverage. And so things that I don't really procrastinate, but there are things that I have that I probably take too much time to complete. And now it's like, that time is not there. The time is now. Make it happen now. And it's also in light of coming through the transition of Kobe and his daughter Gigi, which has been a really emotional transition for us here in Los Angeles. You can feel the sadness in the city. I feel like death came and didn't claim my mom, but claimed someone who was a hero to so many people. And it just added even more fuel to the fire. So I think that you can use the life of someone else as that fire, as that leverage to get you moving.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. You know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Kobe Bryant actually used the leverage of chasing Michael Jordan's.
Yes.
And because he wanted to surpass Jordan, he said, everything Jordan does, I want to be able to do better. So, you know, I love the videos online where they start off with Jordan doing the move and Kobe finishing the move, because even Jordan would say, if there's one player in the world that possibly could beat him one-on-one, it's Kobe, because Kobe stole all of his moves. But he looked at the greatest player on the planet Earth, who is universally considered the best player who's ever played the game, and said, I want to be better than him. Now, obviously, as a Jordan fan, I still believe Jordan is the GOAT. But I will honestly
Well, you know, being out here in L.A., I'm going to argue for Kobe.
Yeah, you know, that being said, I will be the first to acknowledge, to me, that talent-wise, the closest person who's ever gotten to Michael Jordan is Kobe Bryant. LeBron James is a physical freak of nature. But you know, so you can't mimic what LeBron has. You know, he's like a truck, and he's like a U-Haul that drives like a Ferrari.
Come on.
When you really think about it, he really is. He's gigantic, and he's exceptionally swift. But to be able to look and say, that's what I'm chasing after. And every time you look at folks who are massive achievers, they get a real goal. And this is why I think examples and models matter. Napoleon Hill talks about this. Tony Robbins talks about this. Les Brown, all of the people who have been the giants in the self-help development area of life will tell you, you need a model. You know, now you'll get to a point where you transcend it and you might not need it, but to start, what am I looking at? Who am I looking at? Something to focus on.
It's like you need an ideal. You need something that you're reaching for beyond yourself.
Right, right. So, you know, I can remember, you know, as a kid, and I was, you know, a kid martial artist person, and I gave them away, unbelievably so, a couple of decades ago, but I had every Karate Illustrated Black Belt magazine.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you. I'm literally sitting at the corner of Prairie and Manchester, which is the corner that the Forum sits on, and they have the marquee outside, and they're just flashing.
It's I'm sure California is something else.
You know what's interesting to me is that I didn't know him. I didn't have a personal relationship with him. And I've been trying to understand, like, what is this that people are feeling?
Yeah.
And I guess for me, it's like I'm using it as leverage because he has such an impact on people. And if I'm being honest, I was a Jordan fan. I wasn't necessarily a Kobe fan. I was a Jordan fan. And, you know, that was kind of like settled, but there was a mark he left in the earth that was undeniable. Yes. And you can feel it in this city. It's just, it's crazy. And
yes,
so I'm saying, you know, and I'm throwing it out to people to utilize that as leverage.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much. We got work to do, because we have somebody who has patterned a level of greatness that's worthy of challenging us to reach a higher level of our own game. So, so Mamba mentality, handle the business, and thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, God bless.
God bless. Bye bye. Okay, do we still have the other caller in? Okay, let's pull her in, please. Hello, are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing there? Okay, this is just my California blessing. How you doing there, Reverend Sharif?
I'm wonderful. How you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Good to hear from you. So you had a chance to listen to your your two buddies talk about stuff?
Yeah, I heard Reverend Sherry and you know, just the conversation. I kept saying it was a weird time, but it's just an interesting space right now. Mm-hmm. That I'm in for sure. And I've been loving the mama mentality memes you've been putting out and just really looking at someone's greatness and as a pattern is really interesting. And it's like the pattern that actually most interests me about Kobe Bryant is his second page, like next chapter. It was mm-hmm. so interesting to me. And a lot of people have become identified by a role, become identified by one area of their life that he had extreme success as a basketball player. And I was fascinated at watching him redefine himself to himself in front of mm-hmm. all of us. And mm-hmm. that is inspiring because no matter who you are, there's a role sometimes that you get caught up in that you forget that you're not that role. You know, it begins mm-hmm. to be a part of your identity. And so when that external thing leaves, you are lost. And I just appreciate it being able to witness on some level him redefining himself and becoming, you know, emerging as something else. And that was, unfortunately, it's like we didn't get to see that play out, but the pattern was there.
Yes. I think, you know, him following Magic Johnson's example and, you know, who, you know, took, you know, what was, you know, considered at the time tragedy. I mean, you know, I can remember mm-hmm. when, you know, Magic gave the HIV announcement, I start crying. I was like, you know, because the 91, I thought that meant you were dead immediately.
Right.
Because because it was just such ignorance around the topic. And obviously the facts that were happening at the time. And he turned that around and created a whole new career that was more successful than his Hall of Fame basketball career. And of course, Michael Jordan owning the Charlotte Hornets. And I just mentioned to someone at work yesterday that I thought that Kobe was going to outshine both of them post-career. I really did. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, because not only did he have the shift of, you know, taking that same drive and doing it in another way, but he was so happy just being the family guy. Or as he said, a girl dad. He found his leverage. He found his leverage. So, you know, and he was giving people an example of, you know, you can be just as dedicated doing the new thing as you did in the old thing. And I think that at times we want to stay in a season too long. Mm-hmm. And because we don't have leverage for the new season, we identify with the old season. And how we're viewed and the perception and the identity that goes along with it. And because we do, what ends up happening is we get stuck there. And when it's time to move on to something new, we don't. I can never forget years ago, the founder of your church, the Reverend Della Reese, came to Christ Universal Temple just many years ago. And she was teaching a lesson when she was going through the situation of when she was having some challenges with the show, the Touched by an Angel show. And she started talking about how when life is pulling you and you're trying to stay, you get torn in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'll never forget that lesson. Now I know you and Sherry will be asking me for that lesson. I don't even mm-hmm. know the date.
Just go ahead and get it. Okay, get it
but I'll never forget that lesson because I was like, man, she's so right. Like, okay, is the universe moving me in a direction? Because that's leverage as well.
Mm-hmm.
Figuring out where am I in the universal flow of this? And being honest and authentic about what that means and what that looks like. So he allowed, okay, this phase where I put everything in me into it, my whole life up to a certain stage, now I can drop it, and now I can go forward and do something else because he found his leverage point. He wanted to be great in other things, and he wanted to be great as a father, a world-class husband and a father. And you know, I think that was a part of his leverage point. He wanted to help women's basketball. If he's like, okay, if I'm going to write a short story, it's got to be an Oscar worthy winner. I don't know if you saw Deepak. I don't know if you know the person who helped him was Deepak Chopra's son, who actually co-produced that process.
Gautam Chopra. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's Deepak Chopra's son, and they were interviewing him the other day, and he said Kobe would show up at the studio at 2 a.m. for that little clip that won that Oscar because he wanted to make sure it was drawn right, that the words were right, that everything was right. He's like, man, Kobe stayed on us, but it's consistent. Mamba mentality. It had to be up to his standards, and because it was, it won an Oscar. It, you know. He did what
but that pattern, I think that pattern for, so there's a couple of things because I have a good friend that I went to college with who writes for the Rolling Stones, and he wrote an article about Kobe, and it kind of, it was like all, like he, it was a very interesting article in terms of it kind of encapsulated his entire career in a sense of like from a greatness standpoint. And
you got to make this in 20 minutes because I got to take the break.
Okay. You want me to come back?
It's gonna. It might have to if this is not 20. If it's not 20 seconds, because I gotta break in.
Yeah, bring me back. Bring me back.
Okay.
But it's. I'll go into this article. Jamil Smith is the journalist's name, and I'll talk a little bit about what he shared in that article and what it's made me think about.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. We. I'm looking at the clock here, and according to the clock, it's about time to take the break. Here's the music. So we'll be right back with Truth Transforms.
All are welcome. We're glad you found us. Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to Truth Transforms with your host, Reverend Galen McDowell.
Welcome back to Truth Transforms. If you want to call in, I have a caller and another caller on hold. And if you want to call in, you can call in to 816-251-3555, 816-251-3555. And we're talking about how to create permanent change and leverage. And really, Kobe has really come up as a means of how he used leverage. And I have the Reverend Sheree Thompson on with me right now. Reverend Sheree, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah, so I want to allow you to finish your point before we go to the next caller.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I mean, this, like I said, this article highlighted a lot of what we're talking about today, but it also talked about a dark point in Kobe's life when he was, when he had an accusation of rape and looking at the way that he responded to that. And as a woman, when you look at someone like Kobe, it's like you gotta accept a whole person. And when we, just looking at how everyone's honoring him, and I know some people who are conflicted because they could see the redemption in him. They could see that he made a shift in his life. And for whatever happened, whatever the facts were for that experience for him, the idea of is someone defined by their worst thing. And what I love the most is that there's a resounding energy of looking at the best that Kobe had to offer to the world. And allowing that to be the legacy that we breathe in, that we move from, and that we're inspired by. And recognizing that this is a person who, had its highs and lows. But I just have appreciated the energy that's kind of buzzed around and the support wrapping around his wife and his children, as they make a major adjustment in their life. And, one of the prayers that I read said something to the effect of, I'm just praying for all of Vanessa Kobe's friends that they can be there for her in a way that matters and in a way that supports and nurtures her. So it's just like a resounding love that's kind of penetrated any darkness that was there, And I've appreciated that kind of energy that I've at least tapped into as we're just honoring and acknowledging his impact on the universe.
Yes, definitely. So thank you for calling. Thank you, definitely. And, you know, continue to be an agent of transformation and change in the world. Much appreciated. We got work to do.
Yes, yes.
All right. Do we still have the other caller online? All right. Beautiful. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Yes, I am. This is Stan.
Hey, Stan. How's it going, buddy?
It's going great. Going great. Yeah, just listening and enjoying the show. I just wanted to make a couple of quick points. The first one in relation to Kobe, who was obviously one of the greatest basketball players we've ever seen on the planet. But it's something that your last guest said, and she alluded to the troubles that he had, the legal troubles, the rape accusations. I just wanted to make a quick point about that, and that is that a person, an individual, can have flaws, they can make mistakes, and they can still be the great individual that they were. So I don't think that the fact that something happened in his life, whether he did or did not do it, is not my point. But the idea that humans, that people have to be perfect in order to be looked at in a certain light is a fallacy. So I think that we should not, it was like Bill Cosby, for example, when he did his, when he did his show, when he did all the great work that he did, and then he got caught up in some other sexual accusations. And again, not commenting on whether he did or did not do the things that he was accused of, but regardless to whether he did or not, his work still stood for itself. His work was still valuable and very impactful. You know, the Cosby Show, the Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, and other things that he did. Those works still remain solid. They were still very impactful and changed people's lives. So no matter what flaws a person might have, you can still acknowledge that person for the great things that they did. And in fact, no human being is without flaws. So if that is a disqualifier, then nobody will have any contributions to society if you discount their contributions because of the things that happened in their life that maybe weren't so savory. Anyway, I just wanted to make that as a quick point.
Well, thank you, Stan. Much appreciated. I appreciate you calling in and sharing your insight. And thank you, thank you. God bless.
Okay. I do want to make one other point.
Go right ahead.
The other one. So you're talking about leverage, which to me really kind of means motivation. Like, what is the thing that motivates you? What is the thing that can get you going and help you reach your peak in life? For me, that thing, that leverage or that motivation or whatever it's referred to, is excellence. So anytime I see anyone doing something great, doing something that was outstanding, doing something that was excellent, that's what gets me going. And obviously Kobe Bryant was an example of that every time he stepped foot on the court. But there are other people who are not so high profile that we can still get that motivation. We could see that excellence in what they do. I remember one day I was driving down the street. This is like years, like 15, 20 years ago. And you remember that when we used to have parking meters. So yes. On the street, if you wanted to park, there was this meter sitting on a pole, you know, every other car, and then the car pulled up, and if you could find a meter that's open, you put a couple of quarters in and you park. Well, somebody had to empty those meters. So one day I was driving down the street and I saw this guy, apparently his job was to empty the meters. And he was walking down the street. I mean, this guy looked like a gazelle, like he was jumping from one meter to the next one. Now, he was kind of tall and slender. He had a bag on his shoulder and, you know, a long chain, like a chain with a key in his pocket. And the guy walked from 1 meter to the next. It looks like he took 3-4 steps, like he leaped and bounded from 1 meter to the next meter. And his motion was so fluid. He was almost, it was almost like he was connected to that meter, like him and that meter were one. So he would go to the first meter, boom, in just some fluid motion, stick the key in, release the thing, pop the coins in his bag, put that thing back in, and was on to the next meter. And he continued to do that all the way down the street. I literally had to stop my car and watch this guy unload the meters because he was that excellent in what he was doing. So for me, that leverage, that thing that keeps me going is excellence. And I can see this with anybody. If you get up there on the platform and you do a great sermon and that thing was excellent, that's what's going to get me going. That guy walking down the street, whether it's Kobe doing a dunk shot, you know, no matter what it is, if it's a guy like shining the floors with a buffer, he's one with that buffer. So the excellence is what really motivates me, what really keeps me going. And I see that literally every day. If you know, when if I open my eyes and I pay attention, I'm gonna see that level of excellence every day in everything that people do. So anyway, that's the real point that I wanted to make.
Well, thank you. I think that's a very valid point of excellence. And you know, obviously, you know, people try to cancel people today if they're not perfect, because it's always easier to project than it is to deal with your own stuff. And that's not, you know, giving anybody a free get out of jail card. If you've done something you shouldn't do, then obviously you should receive the consequences for it. However, that does not mean that disqualifies your genius, and it doesn't make a difference who it is or what it is. You know, you can be great at one thing and not great at another. You know, Michael Jordan will tell anybody that, you know, when he was playing basketball, his wife was the game. You know, that cost him, you know, in a real way, you know, the relationship with wife and children, because he was so focused on just winning championships and being the best player who ever played. So there's sacrifices to be made, and sometimes you have to figure out what is the cost of this. And you know, I think at times people don't recognize that that you always got to know. Jack Canfield talks about this in the Success Principles, where you need to be really clear about what it is that you're seeking to do and why, because at you know, because there will always be a cost. And I love how we say it in metaphysics. You know, well, I ain't gonna say how I say it in metaphysics, that at the counter of life, there's always an exchange. What are you willing to sacrifice to get what it is that you say you want? Because there will always be an exchange for something. And you have to be sure that it's worth it for you on the back end. Thanks, Stan, for calling in. I really appreciate the call. All right. So if anybody else wants to call in and talk about leverage or permanent change or Kobe, please do so. You can call in at 816-251-3555, 816-251-3555. It's really important that you recognize that permanent change is created by leverage. And some of the things that we said today, whether it was Reverend Sherry talking about the leverage with her mom, or, you know, or Reverend Cherie talking about the different stories with Kobe and how he used leverage, or what Stanley just said, using excellence as leverage, it makes a difference. Knowing what you're going for. And if you appreciate leverage, then you always want to see people who are functioning at a high level. You know, actually, I remember having a conversation with Stan a few years ago, and it shifted my mindset around one quick thing where I was talking about how, you know, school teachers and nurses and doctors and whatever don't get paid what these multi-millionaire athletes get paid. And I said, I want them to get paid what they're getting paid. But I was like, yeah, but these teachers need to get paid more. And the gist of what he said was, yeah, well, Tom Brady can do things that almost nobody on the planet can do. Therefore, he's compensated for that skill set. And it paused me because it made me realize that I was falling back into the the common consciousness that doesn't recognize that excellence should be acknowledged. Now, because he went on to say, how many people can teach a class? How many people can throw that football and whatever he said, 50 yards, off route, whatever, between three defenders? That makes a difference. Well, when you're able to produce results well beyond what is considered even great to the level of excellence, well beyond the norm, if you could do things that other people just can't accomplish, then it is your responsibility to be compensated for it and acknowledged for it. And I think that that's also a part of the leverage. So, when these kids have the Michael Jordan or the Kobe Bryant or the LeBron James or the Serena Williams on their walls and they're emulating them, it's because they're using their greatness to leverage. It was a young lady who I can't remember her name, is African American, half African American, half Japanese person who plays tennis. She's won some things, and she talks about how she wouldn't be who she is today if it wasn't for Serena Williams, because Serena is now at an age and stage where she's still dominant, but she's been dominant for so long, people tend to forget that she's been playing tennis for like 25 years. So those are the things that you have to take a look at. So let me just say this, leverage. Using the examples of all the callers that have called in today, and it makes me think about one basic thing that we all can do right now, especially following the last example that Stanley just shared. In your field of work, or the field of work you want to be in, and field of work does not necessarily mean a job. It could be business. It could be ministry. It could be non-for-profit stuff. It could be service like a Mother Teresa or a Gandhi. But whatever it is, start to study and look at the people who are or were considered the best people in that field. Who are the best people now? Who are the best people before this era? Who are the best to ever do it? And study them. I'm going to give an example. As a New Thought teacher of hardcore metaphysics, but I'm also what a New Thought Christian from the standpoint of my metaphysics have a Christ-oriented slant. I'm fascinated by studying what is the remnants of what we could now call the Gospels of Jesus's life, because I'm like, okay, what made him so excellent? Now, obviously, when you study it from a theological point of view, your theology will affect your perception. But when I study him as a human being and how he's portrayed, because obviously we don't have his direct words, we don't have anything that he actually said he did. The Gospels are documents that are written by people who never saw or ever met Jesus, all of them. But what we do have is the effects of his life and how it shows up and what was written about him. How did he engage with people? How did he inspire people? How did he work with people to motivate and create leverage? How do you walk up to people and use what they know to help them get to where they can be? And that's fascinating to me. You walk up to a farmer and you talk about agricultural things. When you walk and you're talking to fishermen, you use fishing examples and, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. Talking about how did he interact with people to inspire them. That's fascinating to me. Now, but it also, because I'm a metaphysician, because I'm a New Thought person, I study the core people. Who came before me? Who made the impacts that are consistent with the impact that I want to make? So, I'll study the giants. I'll study the Charles Fillmores and Ernest Holmes and the Nona Brooks and the Melinda Kramers and the H.M. Lucades and the Myrtle Fillmores and the Joel Goldsmiths and the Nevilles. And for me, especially, a Johnny Coleman and a Mary Tumpkin. Because I respect their game. that's part of the process. Respecting the game enough to say, whoever it is that is great at this, that's who I'm going to study. That's who I'm going to look at. How do they put this together and that together and work together to bring all of these things together? Because sometimes we don't recognize the level of effect that that has on people. Who's doing what you do at a level well beyond you? Study them. They might be a person right now that other aspects of their lives you might not want. But when it comes to the achieving in a particular field of education or knowledge or occupation, they have maximized what they have. That could be a leverage point for you. If Joseph Murphy, the great New Thought teacher of the 20th century, wrote that going to your family members to talk about your marriage is like going to a carpenter to get your teeth fixed. And the reason why he wrote that, which I think is obvious, is there are a lot of people who want to give advice who don't pattern the success that you desire. And they're unqualified to give that information. You know, I love the story that Joel Goldsmith talks about in one of his books or tapes. It might have been a tape because he has tapes all over the place. So I have tapes of Joel Goldsmith, and I think almost all of his books. And he talks about how he, one of his students was having a hospital experience, and, you know, he's with the family at the hospital, and, you know, he's there for prayer, support, and holding the consciousness. And one of the people that was waiting, a family member, basically started talking about, you know, this prayer stuff doesn't work and the spiritual stuff doesn't matter, et cetera. And Joel Goldsmith starts asking him questions about, missiles and bombs and, you know, nuclear this and how do you fly this, that, and the other. And the guy was like, why are you asking me those questions? I don't know anything about that. And Goldsmith said, well, you don't know anything about spiritual healing, but you're not afraid to share your opinions about it. Now, why is that important? Because Goldsmith, from the perspective of a metaphysical teacher and healer, was a world-renowned spiritual healer. So if a person, for instance, wants to study how does spiritual healing work, he would be a person worthy of study. You know, if you want to understand success, prosperity, money, okay, then study those who are the best at it. You know, Tony Robbins did two books where he said, I'm going to take years off my life and I'm going to study with the top people in the world of finance. I'm going to put it in two books. And he's given away more books than he's given probably tens, if not hundreds of thousands of these books away, you know, through different things that he's done. You buy one, you get another one. You do this, you get a free book. You show up at this, you get a free book. Give the book away. Donate the book to this. If you buy a book, I'll donate this amount of money to homeless people, etc. But the point is this. He said, I'm going to study from the top people. You know, when you are working with anything, find out who's doing it at a higher level and use them as your leverage point. You know, I can remember, you know, early on in New Thought, when I first came in to New Thought after, you know, I had my healing experience in 93, after just coming to CUT and being here for a few weeks and having something that rocked my world. I became immersed in trying to understand, you know, what it would it take for me to be healed after I almost died from the asthma attack in January of 93. And, you know, being in that hospital from, you know, early Sunday morning, maybe at 2 o'clock in the morning, getting out that Wednesday evening and staying home for another, you know, week and a half because it was too cold. and all I could do was just like, okay, I had a few tapes and I had these books for my first class. And I was dedicated to saying, okay, as I told my mother in that hospital, according to these books, I don't have to have this if I don't want it. And those words were some of the most, if not the most important words I've ever uttered in my life. Because this is what I knew. There were people who were functioning at a spiritual level that understood it at such a level that they could heal. And if I could understand what they were teaching, especially Johnny Coleman, because I was in her church, then I didn't have to have this asthma that almost killed me. My leverage was, literally, I have to understand so I can be well. And then my leverage became, I'm going to prove this or I'm not going to be here. Now, that's a very strong statement that I'm not recommending for everybody. However, I do want to acknowledge that that was my leverage point. I had to understand it. So when people were, so what that meant for me was, what was I willing to sacrifice to understand it? So being a 20 to 21 year old and 22, 23, 24 year old person who's reading 3 to 5 books a week, who's listening to tapes all the time in the car, on a old Walkmans, writing down my thoughts, writing down affirmations and prayers on 3x5 cards, you know, doing these visualizations, doing anything that I felt as though I needed to do because I needed to understand what was being taught. My leverage point was so strong, I literally became a new person. A new person. Permanent change can happen. Believe me when I tell you. Permanent change can happen. When I hear stories of, you know, friends or family joke about, oh, you remember when you said this or you did that? It seems like they're talking about another person. Because that person died. Literally, when I walked into that hospital, rushed in, and if I didn't get, if I'd have been 10 minutes late, 15 minutes later, I would have passed away. That day, that the old Galen died. My leverage point was the healing, but more importantly, the healing brought me to my purpose. And my purpose is to teach people what's radically right about them. And I use New Thought to do it. So I want to be present because, you know, it's almost time to get off the show. And so let me just acknowledge that because I think I've run out of time. But I do want to be present too. You can change. Study the people who are the best. That's what I did when I needed to get my healing. Everything Johnny Coleman said, I did it. Everything I read, I did it. No questions asked. And I got the results. So do what you got to do and transform your life. I'll be with you next week with Truth Transforms. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'm Rachel Corpus, an angel communicator, psychic medium, and host of the Angel Talk podcast. This show is meant to help you remember who you are, a limitless being with shoes and socks on. And along the way, we'll connect to people on the other side and experts in the field like authors, healers, animal communicators, and more. Listen to all my shows at Mind, Body, Spirit FM or wherever you get your podcasts.